The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to the Kiefer and Curry's Kip Kiefer. I'm Tony Curry. We have this television show that we do called The Starting Lineup with a cast of idiots every Saturday morning, 30 minutes long. It runs from 10:30, 11 o'clock on ABC 3340, and we're getting ready for college football season. We're about 5-6 weeks away, so we can't wait for that. Make sure you check us out on television. Of course, Kip is all over the place, terrestrial radio, internet radio here on TKR, and of course also on network television. And just happy to be along for the ride, Tony Curry here. You and I talk about different things. We're about the same age. We both have sons who are in their 20s. And so I wanted to share something with the internet.
For full disclosure, both of mine are now in their 30s.
In their 30s. Okay, well, I was trying to paint you a little younger, but we'll say 30s.
Yeah, I appreciate that, but I, you know, there are folks that listen will say, well, Kiefer and Curry is not factually accurate. So
they just act like they're in their 20s. How's that?
That's exactly that, right on target.
So you and I have had several discussions on these, and they're usually some of the best, usually around Father's Day. We talk about our boys and talk about things we share with our sons. And I think we have done a show on this before, but I wanted to bring it back up just because this past weekend, we always talk about things that we would share with our kids. My dad didn't share a whole lot of anything personal with me. I didn't see him cry until I was probably in my 30s. And it was because one of his best friends, his name was Pi Vonderhaar, I'll never forget. They called him Pi, P-I-E, passed away. And it's the first time I ever saw my dad shed a tear. And that was just the kind of generation we were from. Your dad was tough as nails. He was always right. And if your dad ever invited you anywhere, it was an absolute joyride. It was like, yeah. If your dad said, hey, you want to run up to the pharmacy with me, or you want to go to the drugstore, you
want to go to the track, want to go to the Redskins game.
Exactly. So anytime your dad invited you to go anywhere, man, it was special. And you were like, really? Can I go with you? I can go. You know, now
ride,
it's like
ride the train from Washington, D.C. to Charlestown, the horse races in West Virginia. Oh, man. Those are some of the best memories of my life.
Oh, I'll bet they were. And so now it's like, you know, hey, I'm heading up to the drugstore. Anybody want to go with me? Nah, we're good. You know, you go and do your own thing, Dad. Now it's just a totally different animal. So one thing that I love to share with our kids, and it's kind of a great sharing year because it is the 50th anniversary of Jaws. And everywhere you go, you're hearing about sharks. It'll be just a couple of days here. I know Shark Week already started this past Sunday, so you will have some shark attacks this week. There's always a shark attack somewhere during Shark Week. And then the 50th anniversary of Jaws, and you and I have had some discussions about some movies that we thought were just absolutely mold breaking. People still won't go in the ocean type of movies that we've tried to share with our kids. We talk about how great it is. And then when they see it, they're like, just totally like, oh, and it's just such a bummer for the parent because we remember them so differently. And it's the Blues Brothers. It's the Jaws. It's the Caddyshacks. The Blazing Saddles. We could go on and on and on here. I'm not talking about that. There's something about Mary. Those are a little relatively new. But some of the gross, horrible, stupid humor, Airplane, that we just thought were just some of the greatest movies ever made. And now our kids watch Jaws and they're like, what the hell? And by the way, I went on and Jaws got a 97 on Rotten Tomatoes. I like to go to Rotten Tomatoes because it's only been out. Rotten Tomatoes only been out for what, 5-10 years. And so they go back and they obviously give scores on these movies. And I have yet to find a movie that we actually thought was really, really good that they painted as, wow, that just was not good. Computer animations come so far. And I think that, you know, obviously Jurassic Park was the beginning of what computer animation was for me. Cause I mean, you went and saw Jurassic Park, the first movie, and you actually thought that dinosaurs could exist. I mean, it was so real. I used to go back and watch all the Sinbad movies back on Saturday afternoons when they used the clay animation, you know, dinosaurs, you know, and it was still good. It was still great because that's what we had. That's what we knew. And so when we're watching Jaws and I've tried to pull the Jaws, my son didn't get halfway through it and was like, I'm out. This is the worst movie I've ever seen. He's like, I cannot believe this movie kept you out of the ocean. This is ridiculous. It's unbelievable what a joke this movie is. And so now coming out next week, is Naked Gun, the fifth installment, which is interesting because the first one came out in 88 and then 91 and 93. So you had the movies come out every 3 years with Leslie Nielsen and George Kennedy, O.J. Simpson, Robert Goulet was great in, Priscilla Presley, nice beaver. Thank you. I added stuff last week. Just great lines, some great movies. By the way, the first Naked Gun, I think it was called the Police Squad or Files from the Police Squad or whatever.
I think so. Yeah.
Got like a 90 on Rotten Tomatoes. So even they realized that what a wonderful movie was. And now we had Liam Neeson, who obviously has been the biggest badass in our time. Everything from the Taken movies to, I mean, the guy just is like a superstar. He's a James Bond of his own type. And now he's brought into this role as Lieutenant Frank Jr., by the way, to be taken over. And part of me is like really excited about wanting to go see this movie. And another part is like, oh God, please don't screw it up, because the first ones were so good. And it's been almost 30 years since the last Naked Gun came out. And I want to get your thoughts. I know I've kind of gone around all in circles here. I want to kind of get into some of your moments. And the reason this came up was my son and I watched Field of Dreams for the first time together this past Sunday evening.
That one had an impact, right?
It did. I was praying so hard that the movie was as good as I remember, because I hadn't seen it in a long time. I'm not a big movie guy, and it was going to crush my heart. It was going to crush me if my son was not into this movie as much as I was. Thank goodness my son is pretty mature for his age. I think I actually saw him shed a tear towards the end of that movie. I tried to pretend I didn't see him do that. But it was mesmerizing. And because I kept telling him for years that you'll never watch baseball the same way again after you see a movie like Field of Dreams. You just want to get like, come on, Dad, you're being overdramatic. You know, you're 60 years old. You're being sentimental. You're being overdramatic, Dad. It can't possibly be that good. And it was possibly that good. Thank goodness. And I said, did you like it? He goes, oh man, that was a marvelous movie. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on some things you've shared with your kids, some things that you won't share with your kids. Are there some movies where you're just like, how can you not understand this movie? And really we can start with movies, but we can go in any direction you want.
Well, my oldest son was far more impressionable than number two. Number two pretty much was born with his own opinion on everything. And he's just a phenomenal thinker. And he's a Renaissance man. Tony does everything from woodworking to really high level pressures things for his newspaper and magazine. He works here in Birmingham, but he still works for the Las Vegas Sun, the same publication his brother is, the sports editor. But my youngest son was subjected from the time he could walk to that was right at the explosion of the VCR era. Mm-hmm. And we had all that. I had every favorite movie that I had from my entire life, pretty much in a gigantic bookshelf. And Case, my oldest son, really was exposed to those movies from the beginning. That was the movies he kind of grew up on. I mean, he was into the Ninja Turtles and all the different things of the time, but Case was very good about immediately, thinking that the movies we loved were funny. Clay, on the other hand, lived in an era where by the time he came up, he really wasn't movie oriented because gaming was already huge. And he at 5, 6, 7 years old, he was already playing video games and things that and really went a different direction. The whole media sort of changed. I think that was when movies, kind of, I won't say they declined. I don't have the same affection or affinity for movies myself now that I did in the earlier part of my life. I don't think Hollywood puts out a particularly good product. I don't think anybody basically has a new idea. I mean, how many times are we going to regurgitate the same themes of the same movie? How many Spider-Man movies have there been? To like 50? Oh, well, and when I said Superman, that to my son, he gets offended. He goes, well, they're all different. They're all different varieties. They're all different kind of Spider-Man stories and Spider-Man this and Spider-Man that. I said, they're all Spider-Man. Yeah. I don't understand that. Does anybody have an original thought ever now? I don't think they do. We were in Hollywood a couple of years ago and walking up and down the Hollywood Walk of Fame, you know, with the sidewalk things of all the stars, their handprints and their signature. I was just every step I would go, oh, here's so-and-so. And I was going, God, it's just unbelievable the stars that have come out of here. And I made the statement that to my sons, I said, you know, it's unbelievable. Look at what an unbelievable treasure trove of talent and great things came out of this town compared to now. And my oldest son, who again, usually Mr. Complicit, he said, you know what? That's the first time, the first thing you've ever said that makes me think you're an old man. Ouch, you know.
Ouch.
But that really kind of sized it up. That was a real interesting moment. And also to really jump on one thing you just said, and agree with you emphatically, there's a scene. I love collaborations of great actors from our era. And the third, I think, Indiana Jones movie was The Last Crusade. And that was Harrison Ford with Sean Connery playing his dad, Dr. Henry Jones. The movie is just a joyride. I love every minute of it. There's a scene where they're escaping Germany after they've recovered his Grail diary, and they're on a dirigible, a Zeppelin, trying to fly out of the country. And I'm sure you remember this scene. Harrison Ford sitting there while Henry, his dad's got a newspaper in front of his face, and he's going, well, this is familiar. You never talked to me. You never talked to me when I was a kid. And his father doesn't look up from the paper. He says, well, you right when you got interesting is when you left. And he said, and then Dr. Jones, Sean Connery, lowers the newspaper, goes, all right, I'm here now. What would you like to talk about? And Harrison Ford got that silly grin on his face. It was, I don't know. I can't think of anything. He goes, so what are you complaining about? You know, I love that scene. So when you were talking about trying to communicate with your dad in the past, All of us have those moments. We wish we would have spent more time and been closer to our dads, but the father-son relationship, it's a lot more, I'd love to think that a lot of things I said and did made big impressions on them, but I think it's, with fathers and sons, it's more osmosis, Tony. It's more observation by them and you trying to exude and project the right things. And I think they pick up things that you don't, it doesn't have to be communication directly. It doesn't have to be language. I think it's more of a vibe you get from your sons and you give back to them. And, you know, I the older I get, the more I kind of realize that. And, recalling that scene with Harrison Ford and Sean Connery always comes into my mind when I think about it.
It's interesting too. And I think this is where it's best to be a boy. My son is now 20, 21. It's like, man, I'm so glad God made me as a boy. I'm like, when he sees his sister getting up 45 minutes early to go to church, put makeup on, he's like, what are you doing? Why you're 13 years old? Why are you putting makeup? It's just what girls do. And it's funny how often now that I have a daughter that's about that age, how often I hear that the relationship between a daughter and a mother are so different than a father and a son. It is so different. Like she tells me how she argues with her mom left and right. My daughter's never argued with me. I don't know if she looks at me as the disciplinarian. We don't argue. But she talks about the fight she has with her mother all the time. And I'm kind of like, really? Whereas boys and fathers just don't have that thing. I don't know if it's because sons respect their fathers more. I don't know what it is. But thank goodness we don't. It's one of those things where, sometimes I want my boy and my sons to experience things for themselves and don't ever feel like I want to push things off, but there's nothing better than when you finally hit a home run, literally, when you finally have something that, you know, is going to make a huge impact on their life and you share it with them and it actually means that much to them. Like this movie, my son got to pick the movie the next night and he wanted to watch The Glass Onion. And I hadn't seen the second one yet, which, by the way, was fantastic. And with Daniel Craig. And so I was like, it just goes to show that he could have wanted to watch some weird, you know, DC movie or something. And he wanted to watch an actual movie that I think he knew that I wanted to see. It's just interesting. The funny thing about the movies that we remember as being some of the greatest movies of our time. And I was listening to something on MRN this morning and someone said, can you rank Jaws for me? Where would you put Jaws in all of them? And this guy was probably in his 60s. And he said, it's a top five movie of all time. And he said, it's still,
I don't know about
he
that.
He said, it's still the best movie. He said, it's, he said that from a suspense thriller, it's as about down to the bone, cut down to the bone as you possibly can get. There's, you know, if you go off the Benchley novel, which the movie was actually written off of, there was a love scene in that where a woman falls in love with an oceanographer and it gets kind of messy and she's having a wild fling and the book kind of goes off and the shark is almost a secondary kind of thing. Whereas they cut that out in the movie and he's like, it's just cut and dry. This is the shark. This is the guy. It's two things going after each other.
Yeah,
and
the movie was better than the book. I had forgotten that, but I read the book back in the day. Yeah, that's he's right about that.
Yeah, I do think there's the part where they're all drunk in the core of the boat and they're all sitting there. And there's about a 40-minute section of the movie, or at least it feels like it's 40-minute, where they're just kind of going through, you know, we need a bigger boat, and they're all drunk. And that part of the movie just really...
Especially when he recounts the American battleship that gets sunk, man. And all those guys are in the water and you're just waiting to see who's going to be next because they were just shark bait. Yep. And Robert Shaw was the best character in that movie. Oh, the old salty captain who played in movies for 40 or 50 years. That was, I think, the greatest performance of his career. He was fantastic in that movie as Captain so Quint.
But there are, I have gotten the point now where, A Field of Dreams, I've left it out on top. And I'm like, if he ever wants to see another movie, Hoosiers. I have not watched Hoosiers with my boy. I saw Hoosiers for the first time a couple of years ago. I know, but people are like, I'm crazy. And I saw it and I get it. I understand it. I could see where if I had seen it when it first came out, it would be probably one of the best movies I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. But I do think our humor level, and I think our understanding of what we're seeing now in movies has changed. Where in our day, before we had computer animation, before we had to see everything, that's why the shower scene in the Hitchcock movie is so good, because we didn't see the knife enter the skin. We just saw the blood at the bottom of the bathtub. That's all we needed to see. And
that's right.
And it's sometimes why we think the book is always better than the movie, because we can actually think about it and actually, you know, cause our own story and effect. Whereas now it's like, it's not enough for us. We've been so desensitized by everything that we've had on television. There's nothing, you know, even if you look at Final Destination, there's nothing that's it's just gore and nasty and disgusting to the point where I can't even watch it. Leave something up to the imagination, for God's sakes. You know, when you thought about the girl, was when she showed up to school with the miniskirt on and she forgot to button her top blouse. And all you think about was that for years. And all of a sudden you get your first Playboy and it's over. It's like you've seen everything. It's like, okay, well, it's all right there. Yeah, the fun part is thinking about it and seeing it, not knowing what's behind those clothes. And then you finally see it and it's kind of like it's ruined. And then you get desensitized and then you see more and 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 more. I think, you know, he was asking me, what's the next movie you're going to make me see? He said,
I said,
I'm not going to make you see anything. We didn't get 5 minutes in Airplane and he totally didn't get it. I mean, he just like, what? I mean, 5 minutes. I said, honey, you got to give it more than 5 minutes, because I think it almost moved too fast. He just did not get the humor. But then again, the humor from that was so 80s type of humor. I don't know if the kids today would even get it.
Yeah. But, I mean, I don't see how anybody wouldn't think it was funny. And in his defense, he probably is not even aware there was such a thing as the Peace Corps. But when they go to Africa and stuff, and he's all enthusiastic because he's trying to put off his career. But when he says, I'm trying to teach him a little basketball, and they start off looking at the ball and like not the, and then she walks up and like a few hours later, he goes, I think they're getting the hang of it. They're doing reverse dunks and passes around the, you know, I mean, in any era, that's funny, but that I guess funny. If you'd only really appreciate that there was such a thing as the Peace Corps, maybe you wouldn't get it. You have to put these movies in the context of the time that they're released. And
have your boys seen, what did your boys say when they saw Blazing Saddles for the first time, or have they seen it with you? Did they see it with you?
I don't know if my younger son has ever seen it. Because he stands by this and he's kind of proud of it. He says, any movie made before 1992, that I've seen has been terrible. He says, and that was the year he was born. So that's what he's drawn the line on, the year of his birth. But he finally on a flight last year watched the first two Godfathers, Godfather One and Godfather Two, which were basically one movie. They couldn't make a 4.5-hour movie to start with. And he grudgingly said, well, I admit that was pretty good. I mean, Godfather, pretty good. To me, that's the number one movie of all time. Yeah. There was not a movie ever done better with character development and drama.
I've never seen it.
Well, Tony, you are missing out.
I have not seen Godfather 1, and I have not seen The Godfather 2, and I know Godfather 2 is probably better than 1, but I...
Well, it may be, yeah, but you wouldn't get Godfather 2 if you hadn't seen the first one. Yeah. Godfather 2 is a prequel. It shows a lot of the developmental situation, but it also goes back to where the story ended in 1, so it kind of jumps around. But Marlon Brando, Al Pacino, James Caan, I mean, Robert Duvall, the cast is so extraordinary. And to me, all the great movies that I really loved were that kind of situation where the characters really make the movie and the people portraying those characters. Character development to me is what makes a great movie. And I'm almost as bad as my son. I'm not so sure there's been a good movie made since the turn of the century.
Is Goodfellas, where do you put Goodfellas next to Godfather? As far as the mob movies go.
Second tier.
Okay.
Yeah, Goodfellas was really good and had great actors, but the Godfather story and the character development is just extraordinary. And I would challenge you to go watch those because
It's almost like saving myself for marriage. I don't know what it is. Gotcha. I you know what I mean? I mean, it's been so long since I've not seen that movie that I almost feel like I don't want to see it because I'm afraid once I see it, then I won't have it to watch anymore. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because I quoted it today on Need to Know, scene where Michael goes back, the son who had to leave the country. Anyway, I don't want to tell you the whole story, but there's a great line in there where he says, my father is not any different. He's talking about Marlon Brando, the Godfather. My father is not any different than any other powerful man. He does things to protect his enterprises and his family, just like any president or a senator would do. And she says, Diane Keaton plays Kay, the female character. And she says, Michael, you're being so naive. Senators and presidents don't have men killed. And he looks at her in a classic moment and says, Kay, who's being naive now?
Yeah. Great line. Great line. All right. Well, are you going to go see, do you see movies now?
Very rarely. First of all, nobody invites me. Second of all, there's just not much I'll invite you. Because Tony, I'm just not into, and this is just my failing. I was never a comic book guy ever. Yeah. I wasn't into comics. I didn't like Marvel and all these. Every movie, it seems like to me right now, is based on comic books and characters. Yep. I mentioned Spider-Man before. There's like 50 editions of Spider-Man. There's been, I did love Batman back in the day, but only because of the campy TV series of the late 60s. I didn't even know it was a comic.
As long as we keep going to watch it, and Superman just set another record. I mean, there's like 12 Supermans. I remember the one with Reeves for long ago, and I remember watching that movie thinking that was the greatest Superman movie I've ever seen. Now I've seen Superman movies since, and I would say that they're better than the one I saw then. But again, with the computer animation, it just I don't know how far we can go. I don't know how much more we can twist it and turn it. But yeah, it's the storyline. You have to have a good storyline or else the movie's going to suck. It doesn't matter how many explosions you put in there. It's got to have a good storyline or else it's not going to be any good.
I mean, I probably would say the last great movie I saw was in the 90s when I saw Forrest Gump. Mm-hmm. And I know people have said, I've never seen Forrest Gump. And I said, you've got to watch Forrest Gump. Yep. It's just a perfectly done movie. It won the Academy Award, and it should have, but that was really the beginning. And surprisingly, to say this, Forrest Gump was one of the first movies that really used the computer generation yep. to full effect, because Gary Sinise, you know, who plays the commander yep. in the movie, who loses his legs when Forrest Gump saves his life after that ambush. I never heard of Gary Sinise for that movie. I thought he was really an amputee because they just removed his legs for the remainder of the movie.
How about that?
And I thought maybe the early scenes they had him propped up on artificials or whatever. I had to find out later on that, because that was so believable, the scenes where he's on the boat with Forrest and they've survived the hurricane. He's cranking himself up to the mast and he's yelling at God, "Is this all the best you got? You know, I'm not going anywhere. You will never sink this boat." I mean, it was so convincing. But that was the first time that I was really wowed by what they can do, and now it's even 100 times beyond that.
Yeah, Green Mile, Shawshank Redemption, those are a couple other movies where every time they come on, I make myself not watch them, because the minute I turn it on, I can't turn it off.
You can't look away. I've watched my favorite movies like that, you know, countless times. You mentioned Blazing Saddles. It's a shame, and I guess the humor there would go over the head of a lot of people now. But Blazing Saddles, which now I can't believe when I see references, if you say something about Blazing Saddles, people say, "Well, that's a racist movie."
Oh my God.
That's the stupidest comment ever, because the movie's premise is making fun of the stupidity of racism. Absolutely. That's what the movie is all about. Absolutely. That's why Cleavon Little is the sheriff. And all of the rednecks and idiots that are surround him make the movie an all-time classic. And Mel Brooks, it's his crowning achievement. It's just a great, and Gene Wilder in that movie is just phenomenally hilarious. So I may have
to go rent it this afternoon and go watch it again. Just to watch them sitting around the campfire eating beans is enough.
Oh yeah. Well, I think I've told you maybe on a recent show, somehow it came up, but you know, they always do the chopped up censored version on TV of Blazing Saddles, but not so much now, because now it's classified as a racist movie, which is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But there's a scene where Bart, the sheriff, you know, hits the great Slim Pickens, who's the foreman of the crew, with a shovel, and he's about to be hung by the governor, the evil Harvey. What was Harvey's last name from the Carol Burnett show?
Harvey Corman.
Anyway. Harvey Korman. Yeah. He's the evil, like, you know, Mel Brooks is the governor. But anyway, they're about to hang him, but he gets away from that because they come up with the idea that, you know, we're going to send a black sheriff. We're going to send him into Rock Ridge as the sheriff and alienate all the citizens and make them move, because we want the railroad to go through there. Anyway, after all that, he rides back up to the railroad camp for the first time, and all of his friends can't believe it, because they think he's been executed. Yeah. And they're giving him high fives, and he's got a Gucci leather sheriff's uniform on and this fabulous white horse, and the one guy goes, Bart, I can't believe it. I heard they said you was hung. And he said, and they was right.
It was right.
And it got by the censors, you know. And I always thought that was hilarious. It's just such a great movie. There's another quick scene. While we're on Blazing, another quick scene where he's in a standoff with Slim Pickens and all the bad guys, and they got their guns posed on him, and Gene Wilder said, "I wouldn't do that if I were you," because remember, he's the Waco kid who used to be the most feared gun in the West, and I don't know who the actor is. He played Lyle, who was Slim Pickens' assistant. He was the biggest redneck of all time. He says, "Mr. Taggart, sir, would it make you feel better if we were to shoot that blank dead? And he goes, that might perk me up a mite. And Gene Wilder's like, I wouldn't do that if I was you. And he goes, don't listen to that, Alky. He's so drunk, he can't even hold a gun, much less shoot one. And they show Gene Wilder sitting like this with his arms crossed. And he's going, all right, boys, on three. One, two, and then you hear bang, 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 bang. And it's still Gene Wilder sitting there. He shot every one of them in the hand when they drew their gun. I mean, if that's not funny to all generations, I don't know what is.
I will you, brother. All right. You'll hear some fun sobriety on Gambler, big show coming up on Saturday mornings, 10:30, 11 o'clock on ABC 3340. We're going to have another special guest, hopefully joining us. Tim Brandis is supposed to join us coming up this Thursday.
That's great.
We'll have different groups. We had, of course, Chris Fryer from the
Chris Fryer was great.
He was fantastic. We'll try to make sure we have a guest every single week all the way through college football season. Aldo Greco is going to join us. We got some NFL types. Buster Douglas going to join us. So it's going to be good. We're going to have some
great stuff. We're just six weeks away, Tony. It's great.
It's going to be here before you know.
Fantastic.
Man.
And it's already game time on WJOX on Saturday mornings at 8 o'clock. Had a great show this week. Danny Sheridan was our guest. We had Paul Feinbaum on last week. I've been teaming up with Terry Quillian and the legend, and we are blowing it out on Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. It's worth getting up for. It may not be football season, but it is game time.
There you go. Thank you, my friend. Till next week.
Hey, Tony, I enjoyed it, and I'm going to go watch some movies.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.